Hello gamers and welcome to an exciting edition of Game Warp. I'm Elwood.
I'm Kim.
This is our top 10 games reviewed for 2018. Well, we're here once again at the end of another year for ourselves here on the show, and it's certainly been a little bit of a mixed bag, would you say, Kim?
Well, it's been a mixed bag, and to be fair, we had a lot of hardware complications this year, so our list was kind of also quite limited compared to like last year.
If you obviously not listened to one of our top tens of the end of the year before, basically we are going to give our top 10 games that we've reviewed this year. This is the top 10 of what we've reviewed, not what's been released or what's coming up. This is what we've reviewed this year, and you can obviously go back and check out any of these reviews on via the channel or thatmomentin.com or via our blog. So definitely check it out. But I think the best place to obviously start will be at number 10. And number 10, we're going to kick things off with Doki Doki Literature Club.
Yeah, who would know? Who'd have thought that we'd have a visual novel on our list, right?
I know, much less a visual novel nominated by the person who makes my pizzas. So this is a listener's suggestion, and as you say, Kim, this is a visual novel, and it's probably one of the visual novels which has got probably the biggest cult following out there. There's various memes, there's various groups wanting to talk about this game, and yeah, basically what starts off as a kind of cheery sort of manga dating simulator.
Yeah, well, poetry kind of thing, you know, it's kind of like dating via poetry sort of thing.
Yeah, soon turns into something a little darker, perhaps with a little element of crunchy, not quite crunchy pasta, creepy pasta mixed in there as well. This was certainly a unique experience, but at the same time, it was one that I wasn't kind of rushing to go back to just purely because of that third round of pick letters and let's make poetry, which it had me kind of like done, but certainly a memorable experience, if a short one.
Yeah, for sure. I think that Doki Doki really, I mean, as I think it was one of your first visual novel experiences. We did play, I think, in a demo or something before, I think, last year. But this was like a proper first complete visual novel experience, so I'm pretty happy that it even made it on the list. But let's just say the 10th spot was heavily debated. Coming at number 9, we have Don't Nod Entertainment's debut game, Remember Me.
Remember Me, a very visually pleasing game, but one who kind of breaks its own legs with its unique fight concepts, where you get to programming in combos which will impact your characters and give you such things such as like different boosts, like health boosts. And it's we found that it ultimately took away from the game, where you've got this really visually stunning game, this sort of cyberpunk sort of story of set in this sort of like neo-Parisian world. And this bizarre combo structure, which is really, is, you would have thought for a game that's putting so much weight on its combo system that the fighting would actually have some sort of like grunt or feeling behind it, but it felt very shallow and ultimately detracted from the game.
Yeah, because it, you know, like your combo system is really the biggest crutch here. I think that the story itself is pretty unique. Even the villains and the twists and turns of the story, and even like that kind of first step into this adventure kind of Lara Croft. Yeah, so the game is like, it guides you kind of through. There's like a set path, and you don't really, it's not really like an open world experience. But at the same time, yeah. But then I mean, like, what really like is a downfall is the hardest part is remembering all your combos that you've done and how to do it. And there's this specific timing that you have to do. And at a certain point, like, your combos are, like, I don't know, 8, 9 buttons or something. There's no way I'm going to remember 8 buttons. You know, to, what was a combo I did, you know? And then you have to switch it around as you get new things. And it's unique. But I think that it falls short from, you know, the combo system really left something to be desired.
Yeah, it was definitely the combo system as you alluded to before. This is a world where you think you've got this huge canvas to explore, all this things to sort of interact with, and no, it's just sort of like you're going from room to room. It's you're on this set course that you're going to follow. And yeah, I felt that kind of took away from the game. It's sort of like it promises so much, yet doesn't quite know how to deliver it. But at number 8, we saw ourselves return to another favourite world of ours, and that was with Life is Strange Before the Storm, the prequel to one of our personal favourite games, Life is Strange. I don't know how you felt about it, Kim. I was so excited going into this one, and ultimately perhaps a little disappointed.
I guess one thing we have to say right now is, as we're recording this is the version that we reviewed is without the bonus episode, without Farewell. That's the DLC episode that was added on, I think, afterwards. So we're only looking at the three episodes of the main story. It was disappointing because it felt like such little tasks that we had to do. It was like you were doing chores for everyone. Like, oh, go fetch the toolbox and go get this and that and run here and there. And, you know, there was some interesting parts, like the negotiating sort of aspect that they had. But then it was never frequent enough to really make it feel that memorable, like it was really like there all the time. You were just, honestly, it was watching the story. It felt like Life is Strange got stripped apart so much. Like, the experience wasn't the same as the first game. Like, your choices didn't feel like it really had that much of an impact. It didn't really feel like there were that many paths to be taken in the first place. So,
yeah, this is a story that we were really sort of interested in seeing take place. And while the game certainly has its cinematic moments as with the first game, it's just the fact that whenever it came for giving you something to do, it was always felt like, oh, go do a fetch quest. And it was like, well, can we not just do something more exciting? I mean, I don't want to be spending 20 minutes setting a table. I don't want to have like benign conversations with my girlfriend's parents because you guys haven't figured out how to fill a game. It was a shame, because when it worked really well, like the scenes at the sawmill and stuff.
Yeah, like there were nice parts, and I think that's why it's in the 8th, is really because the world is still there, and it's nice because everybody did want to see the relationship between Chloe and Rachel, because that was kind of like the untold story that we all learned about in Life is Strange, but we never knew like an in-depth version of it. In that sense, like, it works really well. It really fulfills that kind of, it's just the game mechanics of it that really fell short from what could have been a better experience.
Definitely. And I also feel that the game was perhaps more hindered by the fact that Ashley Birch didn't return for the role of Chloe. Mm-hmm. And as such, we're left with less of a badass Chloe, but more of a whiny sort of brat Chloe that you're basically just being angry at her parents all the time. And it's strange.
But I think that, I mean, as we're recording this, by the time this goes up, the bonus episode should be up, and I have played it. And I think that with that one, Ashley Birch does come back to play the voice of Chloe. And that is really a nice story, too, because you get to see Max and Chloe. And I actually thought that as an addition, as a DLC for Before the Storm, if we had reviewed it with the DLC, this might have placed a little higher, because I had a lot of fun playing the DLC. And it played a lot like another game that's on our list, rated a little higher later. So, moving on, coming in number 7, we have The Cave, which is by Double Fine Productions.
Yeah, The Cave, perhaps one of my biggest surprises of the year. This was a fun little indie title, as you choose your trio of oddball characters, all with their own unique abilities, to venture through this cave and in turn this strange world that this mythical cave will take you through. So one minute you're battling dragons and the next minute you're in a hillbilly carnival, or perhaps you're in a Tim Burton-esque scenario. The cave was really a lot of fun. It was a great little puzzle game and brought back memories of games such as like Goblins or the Lost Vikings, in the fact that you have to move this trio of characters and around the map, just switching back and forth between them and have them work together to perform different tasks or use their abilities to solve puzzles. It was just a really fun game. This is one that we did have some issues with, a bug that we encountered, which basically killed the game for myself. So that was a little detracting, but the game itself was a lot of fun, and graphically it's a really nice, solid little title.
Yeah, I think the biggest charm of the cave is the cave itself. Because it would always have these, like, weird snarky remarks and, like, weird jokes and stuff like that. And just, like, how it sets the tone when it first starts is, it just really defines what this game is right from the beginning. And the experience is really fun. I mean, it's fun to watch, it's fun to play, it's fun to figure out these puzzles, which are never too hard. It just might be a lot of legwork running around for your characters. So it's a solid title.
Yep. At number six, we have another indie title. We have Mega Aquarium. This is a title from the creators of Big Pharma, Twice Circled. Again, this is another big surprise for the year, and this is a management sim where you get to build the aquarium of your dreams in what was less of a sandbox, instead more of a shoebox scenario. And this I really, really enjoyed. And I mean, I'm obviously this established many times on the show already that I'm just a big fan of like the management sims and the building sims, so things such as like City Skyline and SimCity and Rollercoaster Tycoon. So having the ability to construct my own little aquarium was really nice, and I also loved the fact that unlike the sandbox games, you have your little square of an aquarium and you build the walls out, which meant you have a lot less sort of wasted space. But this was a game with a lot of charm, you know, finding different species and finding ways to mix them together so they don't eat each other, and all the ever inventive things you can add to your aquarium as the levels increase and you have different tasks that you're tasked with. I thought this was just a really, really fun game, and one that I still find myself returning to now. So
yeah, Mega Aquarium was I mean, quite opposite from you. I don't enjoy management sim games, mostly for the thinking part. I prefer my games with the less amount of management as possible. It minimizes the amount of time investment I need to put in. But no, Mega Aquarium was definitely one that was a lot of charm. Like, for me, who, I'm real dumb at management simulators. That's why I don't play it at all. But this one, I had a lot of fun. I think it's the scenario that they do, and they really give you this, like, really in-depth kind of, like, beginning tutorial that really sets you up to know what you need to do. And, yeah, it's very charming. I mean, it's gotten me thinking about playing more management sims, so that's a good thing. Maybe Yay. We'll be seeing more of those on the channel now. So, heading right back into something like the aquarium, and coming in at number five is Abzu by Giant Squid.
Abzu, really fun game. It's in many ways the aquatic version of Journey. A diver who is traveling through the oceans to restore life to them on kind of a spiritual sort of journey. It's kind of a mythical one, but at the same time, this is a game which is just about the joy of movement and the fun in just swimming with fish and making a little diver swim around the map and just exploring. Absolutely stunning game, and quite unlike anything I've played before. I mean, this is just wonderful from start to finish.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, like, Abzu is really incredible. I'm a big fan of Journey, so Abzu was really, like, up my alley. It actually, when I think about it more now, it really draws a lot of parallels to Journey, whether it's those really rush streams of water that you go through, and then you have that sort of, like, exploration aspect. There's a little bit of, like, puzzles here and there that you need to find little things to unlock, like fish and all that sort of thing. There's a meditation mode, which gives it, like, this kind of relaxation sort of experience. And, of course, like, I mean, none of these games are possible and as beautiful without, like, the great music that they, and the orchestral music that they have behind it, and, like, just that whole piece behind it, the whole composition just matches so well to the underwater experience that it provides. Like, I think that what falls short for me is that underwater movement. Like, sometimes they're a little bit hard to navigate. That's one of the... But, I mean, I think all our top five games now, starting from this point on, was a bit of a debate on where the pieces were going to go, because we had a really divided year. So...
Definitely so. I think this year, more than before, there were certain titles that I think one of us was leaning more towards than the other, be it through personal taste or just through the experience we had with these games. And I think it's going to be kind of reflecting in our sort of last five. But at the same time, the our top five this year has just been so solid. It's not been the case where it was easy at all to put them into any sort of ranking at all, and I think that's going to be reflected by our next title, which at number four would be The Awesome Adventures of Captain Spirit, which is a prequel to the much anticipated Life is Strange 2. This is from Don't Nod Entertainment, and this was announced at E3, and I think within seconds of that trailer being announced, there was just frantic emailing back and forth between myself and Kim about how excited we were for this game. And then
slotting in the gaming time, recording time. That shows how excited we are for this game. And not only that, I mean, we are considered, I think, based on this list, fans of Don't Nod Entertainment now. So two titles of them made it on here, and this one technically was a prequel, but it was more of like, I guess it was something of a demo. I think it was more like a concept that it was showing. And normally this wouldn't have made our list, but this was a complete short, kind of like a short story gaming experience. And that's why after some debate, we decided that, you know, this is a game. You know, this is considered a game, not a demo, not whatever, you know. So that's one of the reasons why it made it here. Obviously, Life is Strange 2 is something that we're thinking about doing for next year, so you'll be hearing our review on that next year, once we sort out when we're gonna, you know, when we're gonna get that done and recorded. So, yeah, I mean, Captain Spirit was a really solid prequel experience, especially since, you know, it's nice to see the prequel showing up before the game, before their main game happens, you know, instead of, like, Life is Strange Before the Storm, which happens after. So it really kind of sets the idea that, you know, we get to also think about what Life is Strange is, what it's insinuating towards, because the characters are different and in the main game. So it really gave us a lot of space to not only experience the game, but also kind of give you this way to kind of, like, think about what possibilities this new Life is Strange world is going to be.
Definitely so. I mean, this is a, I think when this game came out, and this is a free game straight off, so that was interesting enough. And the fact that they were saying that, you know, while this isn't directly tied into Life is Strange 2, it is very much part of the world, the same way that Life is Strange 2 is going to tie into Life is Strange, even though it's different characters. And the world building with this series has just been so far been really fantastic, and I think this continued with The Awesome Adventures of Captain Spirit. At the same time, this was one of those games which it makes you reevaluate what a video game is. As here we follow this young boy named Chris, who's dealing with the fact he's lost his mother, his father's descended into alcoholism, and you're basically following Chris as he goes about his day. He escapes into this sort of fantastical world where he plays this character called Captain Spirit, who has these sort of psychic abilities, and you're just basically a grim and basically left to your own devices to wander around the house and like complete tasks and stuff. And it was, I think, as we were saying, that you really felt that you inhabited this character. As you're there, you're trying to be the good son, you're trying to, you know, you're cleaning up the bottles for your father, you're making breakfast, and you're doing all these little tasks, but they feel they've got so much more significance to the story that is unfolding. And you get all these little clues from things you see around and how here going these little fantastical little jaunts, such as like you blow up the snowman using the firecracker, but in his mind he's like using his psychic abilities to destroy the snowman. And certainly where it ended, it made us so excited to see what happens next in the story. And I mean, this is coming 3 years after the events of Life is Strange, and we had a lot of ideas of sort of what this all means, whether it's like building up into this sort of like grounded sort of superhero world, and the fact that in Life is Strange we have the ability to like control time. In this one, it hinted that we have the ability to control sort of physics. And obviously with Life is Strange 2 coming out, there's obviously those undertones as well, to sort of like superheroes in a real world. And I'm just all the more excited now to play Life is Strange 2 as soon as our budget allows it.
Yeah. I think one of the other charms of Captain Spirit was also the fact that, I think you mentioned it pretty much in a nutshell of what it was, is the idea that Chris is in this really negative, bad experience in life. But as a kid, he's able to use his imagination to make all these bad things become more positive. So you're playing this game, and while it does get into this kind of darker territory by the end, you kind of really get that feeling of, you know, positivity through the whole thing. Like, it's a really fun thing, like even just cleaning cans or cleaning the dishes or, you know, all that sort of stuff. He kind of injects this positive and that naivety that kids have. And I think anybody who's a kid has gone through this kind of like imagination where you kind of imagine whether it's having a friend or having a scenario that you kind of act out. And there's just this childhood joy in playing it despite, you know, the circumstances that he's in.
Definitely.
Yeah. So moving on to the third one, we have Double Kick Heroes by Headbang Club. So Double Kick Heroes is in early access currently. They recently released, I think, in August, an update with Chapter 4. So now there's 4 chapters in their early access. It's a shoot 'em up, hard metal, heavy metal rhythm game?
Yeah.
Is that what you call it? Yeah.
Yeah, Double Kick Heroes, Cinderella Story of the Year, as it came from nowhere to hit straight in at number 3. And as I said, this is a rhythm game where you're playing a heavy metal band who travel in the back of a Corvette and shoot machine guns.
Called Gundalak.
Yeah, who shoot machine guns at all kinds of B-movie fodder. This is fun. This is a lot of fun. It's daft, and it's certainly got a retro graphic feel to it, but at the same time, it's doesn't fall into the same pitfall of a lot of independent titles who, like, try to replicate that sort of classic 8-bit era sort of like graphical style and 16-bit. As here, it felt like it worked, but it wasn't like what the game is hanging on exactly. Yeah. And then, well, I suck at rhythm games. This was still a lot of fun to play, and just the variety of things that you're shooting at as you sort of speed along the post-apocalyptic highways. Just it just made a lot of fun.
Yeah, all kinds of different zombies and all kinds of different experiences. It's in, like, little chapters. The music is really good. I mean, it's a really outstanding game. Like, I play a lot of rhythm games on mobile. I play a lot of rhythm games here and there. But I think what really does it for this one is just how they blend that whole shoot 'em up and rhythm game experience together and really make it in a really, really cool experience. I mean, they're like the first three chapters is set in the United States, a post-apocalyptic United States, and then you get to shoot all kinds of zombie chickens and all that stuff. We like zombified animals here, okay? We always talk about that stuff. And then in the chapter four, they actually, like, cross a bridge because that's how close Europe is, and you end up into Europe, in the post-apocalyptic Europe. So it's a really fun experience, and I think being a fan of rhythm games, I thought this was a really good effort, and I'm looking forward to seeing either more updates to the early access or even the full game being released.
Number two, we have got Forza Horizon 4. A big title for Xbox, it being an Xbox exclusive. It's also one of the titles which really has served as a tentpole for the Game Pass, meaning that you can play Forza Horizon 4 via Game Pass a week after it was launched. As I said, the Forza Horizon series has really sort of stand out on its own. It's so different than the Forza Motorsport Sports series, in the fact that you're given this huge open world to play in, and this time the actually move into Britain, or more precisely Scotland, as you get to cruise around the Scottish countryside. We also saw the introduction of weather seasons, so you go through winter, spring, summer, autumn, all of them having different effects on the landscape, the races available, locations you can explore, with just the overall game having a very British feel, and sort of like the cars you were finding, like go and find a Mini, for example, and the James Bond DLC pack as well. So had a very British feel to it, but this is certainly a lot of fun. It's especially if you're into sort of arcadey racer games, so things such as like Burnout Paradise. This is one that would certainly appeal to yourself. But I mean, how did you find Forza Horizon 4?
I mean, we ranked this one super high, and the fact that it got to number two, I mean, it had a chance at number one. To be fair, it had a chance at number one. It was a big debate between number one and two. But I think, yeah, Forza Horizon, I mean, I'm a big fan of arcade games. I'm not such a big fan of open world, but I really love driving down the streets on Forza Horizon 4. It was such a smooth experience. I think that the mechanics took a little while, just like any new game you hop into, and Forza was a new experience for me. So it took a while to kind of like get the grips of like how each car works and the mechanics, and really like finding that sweet spot of how everything functions. But it's so charming. Like we talked about it in the review, and I still feel the same way about it. Is that, you know, you can go into races and you can race, you can go on the roads and you can try out all your different cars. And you can have all these different things you can do, finding cars and exploring different areas and keep opening up the map. But you also have really fun scenic things. You can take this as a road trip if you really want it to be. You know, it could be a hardcore experience or it can be a really casual experience. And I think that that's finding the balance between those two, but still being able to appeal to both sides of gamers is one of the things that really stands out for Forza Horizon 4.
Now we are obviously at number one. And what game has really managed to capture our imaginations and steal the top spot for 2018?
And that was the first game we played in 2018 that we reviewed. That doesn't reflect well on the rest of the year for us. And that is Until Dawn.
Yeah, it was all kind of all downhill. And Until Dawn, PlayStation 4 exclusive, and still a game which is well worth discovering if you haven't already. This is basically an interactive horror movie as you play a bunch of teens brought back together after an unfortunate incident a previous visit to the cabin. Only now the group find themselves being stalked by mysterious strangers and perhaps something even more sinister lurking in the woods. I'm just going to say straight off the bat, this game is scary as all hell. Maybe I'm a wuss, but this terrified the hell out of me playing this, and the fact that I was having to do it on a chapter-by-chapter basis.
Yeah, it was horrifying in the terms that it was like kind of like, you know, that creepy paranormal feeling. You kind of had that slasher kind of scare. you also had this kind of, like, you know, a bit of a, I don't know, a wilderness element to it. There was a whole lot of atmosphere going on, and it was, it's the fact that you had to switch through the characters also, and you had to make these last-minute decisions. You had to go through, like, these creepy, broken areas, and it was a game of, like, reflex and choices, and I think one of the best things about Until Dawn, other than the atmosphere, was also the fact that every choice you made really made a difference. I think a lot of choice-driven games right now sell that point, but miss out on the fact that, you know, it's a really complicated kind of process, I would imagine, to be able to do a game like that. That, you know, your decision and everything you do really has an impact on, you know, at the end, everybody can have a different amount of survivors. And you can, you know, and your ending itself can change, and all that is really, really reliant on just how the game works. So I think they did a really great job, and on top of that, at the end of the game, you can go back to a chapter and start from there and replay the game. So it really gives you that idea that if you didn't screw up at a certain point in the beginning, you can try and go back and save someone and play the game from that point on, which is a really nice perk.
Definitely so. I mean, this is one of the few games where the choices did actually feel like they mattered, and it walks that fine line between making you take risks in order to save characters, and at the same time punishing you hard if you miss a quick time event. There's a number of times where if you miss, like, one quick time event, then it will, like, doom a character completely, and that was a little frustrating. The game itself, there was the story, I was never sure which way it was going to go. It constantly had these surprises, and there's some real tense moments throughout this game, such as, like, when you're walking through the woods because you're going out to the cabin, or if you're just going through the actual main cabin itself. And it was a little stupid in times, the fact that they can get the hot tub working, but they can't bother to find a light switch in this whole place. And some of the choices didn't make a huge amount of sense, but the performances and the motion capture is really great. Here we get to see Rami Malek, aka Mr. Robot himself, and we also get to see Hayden Panettiere, both give fun roles throughout. And I just really liked the way that the game developed. I mean, the fact that the chapters are broken up by Peter Stormare playing the psychiatrist and giving you all these psychological tests, which in turn affect the game, because it makes you question what you're scared of, and then suddenly be like, oh, the game has now changed to reflect these fears. And as I said, I was just caught up in this.
It's just the idea that someone has put so much thought, right, into such a game, and it's you know, till right now, like, I still think about going back and playing Until Dawn and then seeing what path I choose next. And this is like, rarely do you play one of these, you know, choice-driven narrative games that you can think about going back in the game and seeing what other path you're going to take and what other successes, and still have that kind of fresh feeling. I mean, I think that it's really great. It sucks that the Inpatient is only VR, though, so we don't even get to play the prequel of this, because none of us own PSVRs. But, you know, maybe one day.
It's frustrating as well, the fact that we're yet to see a proper sequel, an Undead 2, and I think this is something we keep hoping is going to be announced at some point, much like a Bulletstorm 2 or Left 4 Dead 3. It's just, this game is just so unlike anything else. And to say that, I mean, this game has been out for a while now, but it's still super effective, much like Outlast.
I think it's been out for almost 3 years, probably. I think it was 2015, 2016 title, if I'm not
mistaken. Yeah, I mean, this was like
2014, maybe?
This was 2015. Yeah, I mean, it was originally about for the PlayStation 3, to tie into the PlayStation Move support, and instead they moved it onto the PlayStation 4, and I mean, this is a game, it's just so stunning, it's so atmospheric, and just the choices that you're given. These are tough choices to make, and especially if you're doing it under pressure is even worse. It's sort of like, do I take the risk and do the risky path, or do I take the safe path? And it's sort of like, oh, I don't, because you know that these characters can die at any minute. So it's sort of like, well, if I take the risky path, I might lose a character this way, so I don't want to. But at the same time, you're kind of rewarded if you sometimes take risks. And it was a really, really fun game, one that terrified the hell out of me, much like Outlast. And I think for that, it deserves some credit alone.
It's funny that maybe not last year, but the year before, our first year when we did this, our top game also scared the heck out of you.
That's what you got to do. If you want to win the Game Warp Best Review game, you just need to make it scary as all hell.
Yeah.
But this brings us to the end of our top 10 games of 2018. We hope you've obviously enjoyed listening, as always.
Okay. If you enjoyed this episode, please like, share, and subscribe. Head over to our home base, thatmomentin.com, to read gaming news, or you can go check out our blog at gamewarpblog.wordpress.com. To get gaming news every single day, you can follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook at Game Warp Podcast. You can also check out our gaming obsessions and maybe some gaming snacks and such that have caught our attention over on our Instagram, instagram.com/gamewarppodcast. And when we stream over at Twitch, you can find us at twitch.tv/gamewarppodcast. Till next time, bye!